Hi, this is Cass. Welcome to the Curio Podcast, where two old friends hash out current events, politics, and whatever strikes our fancy. Visit us on Twitter at Podcast Curio. Join our Facebook page. Check out our website, curiopodcast.org. And don't forget to subscribe. Thanks for listening. We need to do some tongue twisters before we start because we are flubbling.
Right. Like, what's his name in Anchorman? Ron Burgundy.
Yes.
Flubbalubbalub. Roger Stone is evil.
Did you hear what happened today?
Oh, he got sick in the courtroom. He had
food
Gatorade
poisoning.
Bottle and he had food poisoning. Oh, no. That's a good instructor.
It is. All right, we should get started because we have to take a... I just clapped a snout.
Oh, Ziggy.
We're here with Ziggy. What are we talking about today, Kimmy?
We're talking about fear, politics, and religion.
Oh.
The menage a trois of hell.
I called it the Venn diagram of, I call it? Politics and religion as it relates to fear. No, a love story.
Did
I say?
Oh, I think it was a love story. Hold on. Let me find that thread.
I've already made the graphic.
Really?
Yeah, it's a Venn diagram.
You're so smart, Cass.
This time change really has me messed up, man. We start
the time
recording at 6 p.m. And
right.
At about 4, I was like, what is it, 8 o'clock? Why isn't Kim here yet?
Right. Is it time for bed?
Can I put my pajamas on?
What the hell is going on?
All right, what did I call it?
The Venn diagram of fear in politics and religion, a love letter.
A love letter.
A love letter.
I like love story better, I think. Because it really is like a love story between politics and religion.
Yeah. And it's probably never ending.
Right.
It's a never ending story.
I had the thought, and I've had this thought before, but it relates to both of those things. Like, fear is used as a municipality. Yep. Also a mutation. No. A manipulation tactic in both government and in religion.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Well, everywhere. Marketing, we could go on and on, but like the synchronicity between the two is a little scary, I think. Yeah. So what'd you find out about fear in religion?
Well,
there's a lot of it.
There's a lot of it. And I kind of went, I think a lot of it's what we already kind of know.
Yeah.
Or think we know, or, you know, that's obvious that it's a really easy way to control people. And when you have this omniscient deity
that you can't talk to and get answers from,
right, that is going to throw down punitive things. I've got great words tonight.
Hellfire!
It's just really convenient for the humans.
Who want to control.
Second rung.
Right.
So it's... I kind of looked at it in a few different ways because I thought this is too simple. So I went way, way, way back to the first written record of any kind of religious anything, which was back to the Sumerians.
Right.
Which is like, that's a whole nother show in itself.
Yeah. Oh, can we do that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do that.
Ooh. Let's do it. Really, really crazy, interesting stuff because we don't know a lot. You know, we've got some tablets that we found.
Right.
But most of the information about that first civilization is lost.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, God, what was in the library at Alexandria that...
Oh!
And every once in a while I think of that and it's like a pit in my stomach.
Yeah, me too.
Humanity was totally changed at that moment when all of those records and all of that information was lost. Oh my God.
I sometimes think about the, you know, the major fires that have obliterated cities like London or Chicago or San Francisco and all the records that were lost because nothing was digitized back then.
Oh, no.
London. That city's been around for 2,000 years-ish.
Yeah.
Just all those records gone. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Books, artifacts.
So what about the Sumerians was interesting to you?
Well, I got into the story of Gilgamesh.
Oh, yeah.
And the story of Gilgamesh is really interesting. It's a lot of those really old stories are a little wonky because they may not even be interpreting it correctly.
Right.
Right? It might not even be deciphered correctly. And I've heard that this symbol, you know, has been said to mean this word, but other people think it means this word. And so there's some murky waters there.
And things have been translated into several languages before it's gotten to us in English.
Right.
So who the hell knows?
I tried to read the original translation, which happened in the 1800s. It really wasn't that long ago, relatively speaking.
Right.
And I was like, nope. Can't do it. So I just kind of went for the general, you know.
The Cliff Notes version?
I went for the Cliff Notes version. But, you know, Gilgamesh was a ruler. He was not a nice guy. He was kind of a dick. His people were like, we can't take this shit anymore. He's just using us for labor and he's using our women and he's just a dick. And so they asked the gods for help. They're like, we need help. Please help us get out from under this fucking nightmare.
Right.
And the gods hear him, but they take the very long road. They take a different way. It's not like hellfire, like they're going to strike him down with a lightning bolt and he just disappears.
Do they kill him slowly with heart disease?
No. I could make a comment about modern time dictators. Don't do that. Well, what they do is they make a twin of him, and he's out in the woods doing his thing. They plop him down. He ends up, I'm just going to really shorten this because it's too long. He ends up meeting Gilgamesh, and they become friends. They're buddies. And they decide to go on this journey together. They go on a hero's journey together. The twin ends up dying, and Gilgamesh is heartbroken. He's beside himself. He's sad. He's like, oh my gosh. He's finally like found a companion, somebody that he loves and cares about, and that has been taken away from him.
So he gets meaner?
So he goes on another journey.
Oh.
He goes to the underworld. And meanwhile, there's all these gods and goddesses, and they're pulling all this crazy shit, and it's, you know, very epic like. So he goes to the underworld, does all these things, ends up with this plant that is supposed to grant him immortality. And he takes the plant, he's going back to his town, he's all happy, la la la, got the plant, it's all good, happy, happy, happy. I'm gonna take a bath. So he sets the plant down next to the little stream or brook or lake or whatever. Gets in the water to take a bath, and a serpent comes and takes the plant away.
A serpent?
A serpent.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so the plant is gone. And then he's in total despair again. He's like, oh my God. And he's faced with his own mortality. He's just seen this person he really cares about die.
Who looks like him?
Who, well, kind of. He was kind of a scruffier version.
Ah, got it.
So he seeks wisdom from another god. And basically what happens is he realizes that the only way he will live forever is in people's memories and by his deeds. And so he decides to be a good guy. He's like, oh, this is what it means to be immortal, is you have this grand legacy where people remember you fondly and they love you and they say kind things about you and they remember you as this wonderful person.
Wow.
So I'm way off the fear topic here. But
it's okay.
I'm coming around, I promise. So then I'm like, in my crazy head, I'm like, okay, so I got to start looking at other religions. And, you know, there's always a creation story. There are themes.
Right. Morals. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's different in every culture. But what struck me was water is a common theme in these hero stories.
Mm-hmm.
And the snake
mm-hmm.
with Adam and Eve.
Right.
So Adam and Eve are in the Garden of Eden doing their thing. They're all happy, slappy, la, la, la. Everything's cool. And the snake comes and says, hey, why don't you eat this apple? And Eve's like, oh, no. We're not supposed to eat off that tree. Or Adam, whoever said that. And the snake's all, oh, it's cool. Go for it. Do it. Okay. So they do it. And what happens? They just fucking damn all of humanity forever to eternal...
I never understood that.
So the difference is Gilgamesh goes and he stole this plant. He wasn't supposed to have it. He was sneaky. He was a sneaky guy. He went and got the plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what happened to him and what happened to Adam and Eve? So in the story of Gilgamesh, he does what he's not supposed to do fearlessly and has this enlightened moment.
Oh, yes.
Adam and Eve go and do what they're not supposed to do fearlessly.
And they're doomed.
Punished. And they're doomed. And all of humanity is doomed. So then I started to think. There's so much thinking going on.
You don't say.
So then I thought, well, what's the difference? I mean, obviously the difference is one story is hopeful and kind of says, in my mind, the truth. I want to be remembered as a good person.
It also says you have the power within you to become a better person.
Right.
You don't need something external outside of you to give you morality and to show you that you're a good person.
Exactly.
Right.
So it's like a parable. It's like it's an example story.
Right.
Whereas the Adam and Eve story is not so much.
Yeah.
It's kind of the beginning of humanity struggling with their own
desires,
their own self-awareness, their own consciousness. Another thing that was similar between Gilgamesh and Adam and Eve is the twin brother in Gilgamesh is hanging out in the forest with the animals. He's all hairy. He's a mess. He's happy as a clam.
Oh, that's like John the Baptist.
Right.
Yeah.
And I like John the Baptist.
Right.
He was kind of a nutty guy.
He was like the hippie.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He was a hippie guy. Get in the
water.
Right?
Yeah.
So Gilgamesh at some point, Gilgamesh sends one of the temple prostitutes out to this guy who he doesn't know yet, which is his twin, in the forest. Sends this prostitute out and says, go see what this guy's all about. Well, they lay together for 7 days and six nights. It's a magic number seven again.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're done, he realizes that he is a man. Like he's not of the animal consciousness anymore.
Mm.
He's got self-awareness.
Oh.
And then his journey begins. So just like Adam and Eve are in the Garden of Eden, naked,
with animals,
happy,
right.
Blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly they're self-aware and they've got to cover themselves up and they have shame and they have all of this stuff inside their brains.
It's
just like me.
Just like you. I was going to say when I would go to church with my grandmother when I was little, right after my brother was born, the preacher, it was a Southern Baptist church, the preacher did this sermon about original sin
mm-hmm.
and how everyone is born with sin. And he kept saying that. And I was like,
yeah.
11 at the time, going, I don't understand how someone could be born with sin. But that story, he retold the Adam and Eve story and eating the forbidden fruit and blah, 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 blah. I could see it at that age as being a mode of control.
Right.
You're even your little baby is going to grow up full of sin unless you let me lead him and control his actions or whatever.
And tell him the right way to behave and the right things to do and the right way and the right way and the right way. Rather than figuring it out himself.
Right.
Like Gilgamesh. So all of this brought me back to the red brain, blue brain.
Oh, yeah.
Research. And so I thought, okay, so if people are hardwired, if some folks are hardwired to really easily self-regulate, hear a story like the one of Gilgamesh and be like, oh, I see. It's not easy. It's a journey. It's hard.
Right.
But it's attainable. You can do it by yourself. You know, it's your own journey.
Right.
Whereas some people may really respond to that fear. Maybe they don't have that self-regulating circuit in their heads. Maybe that was a way back then to be like, okay, so Bob's cool. Yeah, he stuck his head in the fire. He's kind of a doofus, but you know what? He knows that he shouldn't be killing people. He knows he can't steal stuff. He knows he can't poop on Steve's brand new leopard skin rug. But, you know, maybe, I don't know, John over here is kind of a dick and he's stealing stuff and he can't self-regulate. He's peeing all over the place. He's raping people. He's raping animals. He's a mess.
Right.
So we got to figure out how to handle John. We got to figure this shit out. So rather than giving John rules themselves, wouldn't it be easier to control John with some magic sky god?
It would.
That he couldn't have retribution on?
Yes.
Because
who was magical and all-knowing and could see you when you were alone.
Right. He can see him peeing all over the place and he knows that's bad, bad, bad. Whereas if Bob walks up and goes, John, stop peeing. I'm going to punch you in the fucking face, dude.
John will just turn around and punch him in the fucking face.
Yeah, or kill him. Bam.
Because of the murder gene. Because
of the murder. He doesn't care. He's not self-regulating. So that led me to a place of like, maybe fear was actually very, very functional long, long, long time
during
ago.
During tribal times, yeah.
Yeah. But since then, it's gotten all fucking crazy. It's like, it's the Johns got hip to it and made it their own.
Right. They're now using it against other people who can self-regulate and don't need their weird Santa Claus stories.
Right.
He knows if you're sleeping. He knows if you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. Because he's a voyeur and he's staring at you. Oh. Did you look into, like, the Crusades or the Catholicism or...
I really got stuck in that...
In Gilgamesh realm.
Yeah,
world.
But I think we can pretty much look into any of those and see how the fear of eternal damnation is gonna really affect a group of people.
What do you think about the inherent patriarchiness of Christian religions, of God religions, as opposed to the pagan religions or the earthly religions that existed before that seem to be more centered on like a balanced mix of, you know, masculine, feminine, or on the feminine divine, you know?
I think the Sumerians had a mixture of gods and goddesses. Their goddess Anu, I believe, of creation. She was a badass, and she was creation and destruction. And she was not always very friendly. You know, she would get pissed and throw down some stuff on people.
Mm-hmm.
So that made me kind of go to a place of like, well, women have babies.
Yeah.
We make people in our bodies.
Yes.
That's a pretty important thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty powerful thing to do.
Right.
Women are also mothers to young people, boys.
You don't say.
So, yeah, I started to think maybe there was some kind of fear of the female in charge, the female authority figure.
Right.
And men figured out, oh, well, I can just overpower them with my body because I'm bigger, I'm stronger, got more muscle mass.
Right.
Maybe that's where that came from. But I think about that a lot.
Like, yeah.
Where's the kernel of that? You know, why?
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I think about like the Salem witch trials, you know, burning women at the stake or hanging them or whatever. And I always thought that was some sort of religious fervor. My friend Kelly recently had been to a play where they, you know, dramatized this scenario that people think is also possible, is that the people who were in charge of the town, if a woman, let's say she was a widow and her husband owned a huge farm or a factory or whatever, and her husband dies, they would accuse her of being a witch so they could take her land.
Uh-huh.
And apparently it happened over and over again. So there was more to it than just religious fanaticism. It also had to do with controlling women and taking things away from them.
Right.
Like taking their agency away. They had no way to make money if they couldn't farm their own land.
So it turns into a power grab.
Right. And which is where I start to see that where it starts crossing over between government and religion.
Yeah.
Using
yes.
religion
yeah.
as a form of control. For a government. Even a lack of religion used as control, like in communist countries.
Right.
It's an interesting topic, Kimmy.
It really is. And there's so much to it.
Did you want to talk about, what's her name? Paula White? Is that her name?
Paula White. Oh.
Nancy White? What's her name?
Ew.
White lady.
Talk
about her.
The televangelist. I didn't make any notes about her, but she's horrible.
I'm sure you guys heard about her. She's now in the White House as Trump's spiritual advisor, and she's a Looney Tunes.
A freaking loon.
She thinks that the ground at the White House is holy now because she went there.
Oh my God. And where does that come from? Like pretending that you're God. I think it's...
Well, she's a televangelist. She's got to get people believing that her word is holy.
She has a lot of power.
Yeah.
But just in general, you know, just the obsession with power and being at the top of the hierarchy. And
right.
That involves fear, too. Sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
I rabbit holed on that one. Oh, my God. Yeah. So I found this Newsweek article that says Donald Trump's spiritual advisor, Paula White suggests people send her their January salary or face consequences from God. God ain't into money, folks. Didn't he have something to say about greed?
I think that was Jesus.
Jesus said, let's, you know, kick the money changers out.
Chase the money changers out,
of the temple. But also in the Old Testament.
I'm sure, yeah.
Greed is one of the seven deadly sins.
Right.
But not for Paula White.
She also said earlier that if you speak against Donald Trump, you're speaking against God. Because he's the chosen one. Him and his furry head. And his orange skin.
This is not normal. This is not sane. This is not...
None of it's normal. But
every
that
day.
Shit's scary. It's hilarious and it's scary.
It's, it is. It's terrifying.
What are you reading?
I'm reading the part of the article. Explaining the principle of the donations, the Pentecostal televangelist who has recently spoken out in defense of Trump's mental health following claims in a tell-all book that the president is unwell, suggested that people would reap rewards after donating to her.
What would those rewards be? Does it say what her thing is about wealth? There's a name for it.
Oh, her kind of her religious wealth.
Like, I'll think of it
this
later.
This is kind of just, this article is pretty much, it's a lot of quotes from her. A lot of crazy quotes and stuff. So it doesn't say a whole lot about, oh my God. Each January, I put God first and honor him with the first of our substance by sowing a first fruits offering of 1 month's pay. That is a big sacrifice, but it is a seed for the harvest I am believing for the coming year, and God always provides. That is terrifying.
Oh my God.
So when she does this, all the poor people have a choice. They can either become poorer or they can suffer the wrath of God. Seriously.
I'm sorry to laugh, but like,
people believe that. That's what gets me. Like, I'm sorry, you don't have enough money to buy God's forgiveness.
Jesus fucking Christ. So another thing that I watched a documentary. I sent you the name of it, I think. It was called Repealing Roe or Reversing Roe or something like that. It's on Netflix. It's a new documentary. But it talked about this influence that religious groups have over the government now. And I think a lot of it started with the family. We've talked about the family before. Did you watch that?
I did watch The Family, and that was very terrifying.
Terrifying,
also.
Yeah. But the first state in our country that had a lift of the abortion ban. She's got her hands on her face, like,
I'm like,
don't tell me about it.
Like the scream.
The first state to lift the abortion ban, it was still illegal federally, but was California. And I was like, oh, cool. The governor at the time was Ronald Reagan. Because the Republicans at the time had no interest in thinking about abortion. They figured, because they were constitutionalists and small government and
back when Republicans
personal rights
were Republicans
when they were actually conservative.
Yeah.
So their whole thing was, that's not my body, that's that woman's personal right.
Let her do it.
Let her do it.
Go for it.
He didn't care. By the time so then Roe versus Wade happens. By the time Reagan makes it to the presidency, there are these Christian militant groups. They're the ones that, you know, kill abortion doctors and, you know, scream at the women going into the clinics and all that. But so they have a lot of power because they were able in 1980 when Reagan was running for president to mobilize their whole group, the evangelicals, and say to Reagan, if you say that you are against abortion, we will give you all of these white people. They will all vote for you.
Right. Yeah.
And so then he came out and very meekly said something like, I don't think that people should be interrupting their pregnancies. I think that's a human, like, very like, you could tell he didn't believe it. You could tell he was like, whatever.
He's getting kind of strong-armed into it.
So every Republican since then.
Yeah.
So then they showed George H.W. Bush, Poppy. Mm-hmm. He also, 70s and 80s, didn't care. He was like, I think it's a medical procedure between a woman and her doctor. I have no opinion about it.
And that is basically the religious approach across the board. I went through and looked at all kinds of different religions about abortion, and they're pretty non-committal. It's like, well, you know, if it's some religions are like, well, if it's, you know, in the first like 12 weeks, not a problem. You probably shouldn't do it later, but you know, it's up to the mother. It's, you know, rape is never really okay to, you know, it's okay to have an abortion after rape or incest, etc. There's nothing about abortion in the Bible either.
Right.
Just a side note. Go ahead.
Oh, no. My point being is that politicians have now basically given up their actual morals and what they actually think. I mean, of course, they're politicians, to get this evangelical vote.
Right. Yeah.
And now Republicans just expect this evangelical vote. And the evangelicals now,
right,
it's sort of turned, it's on its head where they don't care what Trump's done at all. Exactly. As long as he says.
Yeah.
And he also used to say he didn't care about abortion. He thought women should have the right.
He didn't give a hoot.
He did not give a shit.
No.
And they were lobbying him before he declared his candidacy.
Right.
And he went out during one of the debates and said, I'm going to appoint judges who believe in pro-life.
Yeah.
And as soon as he did that, the evangelical leaders sent out word. Okay, mm-hmm. Vote for him.
Yeah.
And the people that are supposedly praying and have all these high morals, they don't care about all the other stuff Trump's done.
Right. Saying God damn it all the time.
They don't care.
That's blasphemy to them. And they're willing to overlook it because he's the chosen one. And this is where it just starts to get really mucky. And it's like, what the fuck is going on? Nothing is cut and dry anymore.
No.
And so the fear starts, the fear starts to kind of mushroom.
Yeah.
And morph into something that's, I don't get. You know what I mean? It's right now, I'm afraid we're going to lose our democracy.
Yeah, me too.
And along with that goes all kinds of stuff.
Right.
But so many people don't see it that way.
No.
The far right people don't see it that way. And I'm not exactly sure what they are afraid of at this point.
Or Black people.
Are they emboldened?
Mexican people. Oh, well, let me just make this last point.
Okay.
Before anybody cared about abortion laws or had anything to say about controlling women's bodies, the leading group that would help women find abortions was a group of religious leaders who wanted to help women who were either going to be very depressed, have their lives ruined, weren't married, blah, 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 blah. So it was this group of Episcopal, Catholic, all kinds of different religious leaders who just wanted to help women.
Right.
I don't know what to think about that, because now it's completely turned around, and it goes back to what you were saying. There's nothing about abortion in the Bible.
Right.
It shouldn't be mm-hmm. up to a religion or a government to say. I mean, we could debate that all day long, but I just thought it was interesting that it was. And the first person that speaks in the documentary is this guy with like a collar on, like a father.
Huh.
Who said, back in the 60s, I used to help women find doctors that would help them.
Right.
They had a hotline that women could call.
Probably because they understood that this is worst case scenario, last choice. Like, it feels like the religious right and the hard writers right now think that women just have abortions for fun, just as birth control.
Right.
Just that women have no conscience. They don't suffer at all from it. They're just evil people who are killing innocent babies.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe back then they understood, like, this is a horrible, difficult decision. This is not easy. This woman would not be doing this unless it were dire circumstances or she was desperate.
Right.
Let's help her. She's struggling. She's in pain. She's frightened. She needs help.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, there's the punitive side and the self-regulating helpful side. Like,
right.
Which way are you going to go with that?
Now, so they've started to, you know, chip away at abortion rights state by state by state by state. At some point, their arguments weren't working anymore. the right-to-lifers, and they decided they needed something more sensational. So they came up with the term partial birth abortion.
Oh my God, which is just the...
Which is not a thing. It does not exist.
No, it doesn't. Oh my
God. And when Trump came out and said that thing about they give birth to the baby and then abort it. Do you remember when he said
that? Oh, yeah. I remember that whole shit show. There was all kinds of weird information flying around. She aborted her baby in 8 months. And I said...
That's not possible.
I think I heard it like on the TV. I look over at my husband. I said, that's a premature birth. That is not an abortion. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? That doesn't make sense.
They in this documentary, they interviewed the guy who basically came up with that term. Like, yeah, we needed something more sensational. And so they spread that around, and it's not a thing. And so
it's not real.
No. In this debate, if there were two sides to this debate working in government and religion right now, mm-hmm. there are people working who are scientists and nurses and doctors.
Right.
And on the other side of the debate are men hired by these right to life groups. And they're just like lawyers or marketing guys. And they write and distribute bills to the states to get them to start passing more and more restrictive abortion bills.
So why?
None of it's based on science, what these
right.
marketing guys are
doing.
Oh, yeah,
right. No, yeah. It's not much of religion is
no. real.
Why are they so hell-bent against other people having abortion?
So,
what difference does it make to them if a Muslim woman has an abortion?
The opinion of a lot of the people in the documentary was, so before Roe versus Wade, nobody really cared so much about abortions.
It was not talked about.
People got them and they weren't legal, but there were a lot of doctors that would do it on the side if you had enough money to get it done or whatever.
Yeah.
It wasn't until Roe versus Wade happened. That gave the woman control over her body, and that's in the wording.
Legally
gave a woman control over her body without any restrictions. That religious groups looked at that and said, well, that's not okay.
It had to be a core group of men, I'm guessing.
It's all men.
Who were very charismatic and were able to convince other people of this.
Yes.
Why, though? See, that's what gets me is like...
Because they didn't want women to have control over their own bodies. That's why I was asking you about what you thought about patriarchy and Christianity. Because I feel like part of the fear that's used is to control women, A, but to convince men to control women.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Oh, here's a quote from the Nazi Hermann Göring.
Ooh.
The people don't want war. but they can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders.
Oh, God.
This is easy. All you have to do is tell them they are being attacked and denounce pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same in every country.
Wow. Yes.
Yep.
Yep.
Through political repression, economic exploitation, physical repression, which reminded me of abortion, the abortion debate.
Yeah.
Political control, censorship, racism. If they can have all the races fighting, then we're not watching them steal from us and take our liberties away.
Oh, currently Trump has like done all kinds of fucked up things while we're focused on the...
You don't say. Did you hear what he did about, so February, no, November is supposed to be like Native American Appreciation Month or something. Did you hear what he did?
No.
He changed it to...
Trump Appreciation Month?
No, like...
That's not far off.
American National something something Founders Month.
What?
Like, completely disregard the Native Americans. We're just going to celebrate the white guys once they got here.
Oh my God. Ugh.
It's like so fucked up.
Every day
is something more and more
every
fucked
day
up. Yes.
It's something. Officially, we're pulling out of the Paris Accord.
Yes.
Meanwhile, 111 or 1,011, lots of ones, some zeros. scientists from all over the world have come together and written a treaty or treasty or
treaties. How do you pronounce that word?
I don't know. Obviously, I don't.
Treaties.
Sounds like cereal.
Treaties. They're crunchy and good for you. They've got vitamin D.
And science. Basically saying we're in the middle of a, you know, this, we're having an environmental crisis. Global warming is real. It's a big problem. This is a big problem we need to address. Again, like, I don't know how many times this has to happen before people, politicians, wake up and start acting on it.
It's not about waking up. It's about greed. And we've talked about this so many times. If they didn't have the ability to make money from their position,
right,
vis-a-vis lobbying, etc., and jobs after their tenure is done, mm-hmm. we wouldn't be in this mess. They would have to answer to us instead of to corporations and lobbying firms.
Exxon,
right.
Mobil. Right.
I really want to read Rachel Maddow's new book about the gas and oil industry and how it basically destroys countries.
Oh.
One of the main premises is that, you know, if oil is discovered somewhere, mm-hmm. people go, oh, yay, we're going to be rich. But then the government comes in and takes all of the resources.
Right.
And the people are then left destitute. And the land is polluted and the water's polluted and blah, 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 blah.
Right, and the people are sick and then they need help
right.
and they've got to rely on the government. And
she just talks about the power struggles around and how, you know, Rex Tillerson was the CEO of Exxon and that was the first person Trump brought in.
Mm-hmm. He's been so transparent with his cabinet and just, you know, favors, paying off debts. I don't know. But the people he has brought in to this administration are like, what? Why? Well, greed.
Money,
obviously.
Greed, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just, it's not how I want our government to be. So it's
no.
hard for me to believe.
And speaking of fear, I've been feeling lately like we already are in some sort of autocratic dictatorship. We're not being represented.
No.
We're paying taxes and we're voting, but the people that we're voting into this representative government that we all have, according to the Constitution, we don't have enough money to compete with the corporations and lobbyists.
No.
So their say means more than our say, and we're not being represented. And that is scary to me. And I can see why people, rather than thinking about all of this, you know, the people that we all know that just put their head in the sand, they don't want to hear about it,
right,
would rather be distracted. Why would you want to think about all this? Other than it's your yes. civic duty. But it's a scary time.
It is a scary time. And it's, I can't not think about it.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I have to be, you know, out of the country.
Right.
Away from the news to not think about it.
Right.
But
even then, you were probably thinking about it at night when you laid down, or, you know what I mean?
Right.
I know I was.
If I got a bit of information, it would creep in, and I'd have to kind of fight it back and stuff. But, yeah, there's a lot of people who are really comfortable just looking the other way and being like, eh, whatever. It'll work out. It always does. And in my world, it's like, no.
Uh-uh.
This time feels different. I mean, okay. I haven't been around that long, relatively speaking.
I mean, we've been around since, I mean, I've been aware since Jimmy Carter was president.
Yes, right.
So we've seen the slow progression of conservatism into fanaticism for leaders instead of the Constitution. We've all seen the erosion of our liberties after 9/11. The Patriot Act and Citizens United. I mean, those two things took away a lot of our freedoms and they're still in place today. So they keep moving the goalposts.
Yep.
They keep taking little bits of our freedom away. Mm-hmm. They keep not representing us a little bit more every year.
Well, and we're at a tipping point now. Right now, we're fighting for a clean vote that isn't
corrupted
by a foreign country.
Or hacked.
That's, I mean,
I've got my head in my hands.
I woke up this morning. My first thought this morning when I woke up was, what if he does win the next election?
Yeah, I've been thinking that lately.
And it was too much. I just had to shelf that. I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You just woke up. Why aren't you thinking about coffee or a good pee?
Like, well, yesterday, I think it was yesterday or the day before at one of his rallies, he said something about wanting that he was going to be president for 21 more years, he told them.
Oh, yeah. And that started with eight more years.
Eight
and
more
then
years
it was
12, or one.
And then it was 16. Yeah. And yeah. No, he would absolutely be the dictator of America if given the opportunity.
I'm not having it. I'm not. No, I'm saying no.
I'm saying no, too. People are going to have to wake up. And I'm hoping that what's happening right now is things are starting to kind of unravel.
Well, they're unraveling around the world.
Yes.
I mean, there are protests going on everywhere.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And that's not even, like, forefront in our news. You kind of have to dig to find that.
Yeah. You've got to watch Democracy Now! Or NPR or something.
Yeah. Or BBC. Yeah. Something. But there's a lot of unrest going on, and it feels like, you know, we've talked about being a global community, global economy for a long time. Well, maybe those gears have been moving behind the scenes for longer than we know.
Oh, I'm sure.
And all these people are in cahoots and there's shit going around. I mean,
they have us all fighting with each other.
Right.
And meanwhile, they're raiding the chicken coop. So.
Right. Like I've said before, right now, our entire country should be rallying against Russia, who has been accused and meddling in our elections.
And that also funneling dark money through the NRA to Republican politicians. Why isn't that? What? And when they get caught, they go, oh, we'll give it back. And then we don't hear ever again if they actually gave it back or donated it to charity. Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, he got like $800,000 through one of those guys that got arrested trying to leave the country, one of Giuliani's associates.
Oh,
Parnas
and
whatever their names are.
Really?
Yes. And when somebody went, hey, you got a bunch of money from these guys that probably, most likely, definitely came from Putin. He was like, oh, I'll give it back or I'll donate it. And nobody ever heard anything about it again.
Right. Who are you going to donate it to? The Donald Trump campaign?
I'm sure. What the fuck? This is what I'm talking about. We need money out of politics. I don't know what that looks like, but now is the time for experimentation. Everything's gone to shit. We might as well try something new.
So what could happen is if they just start gutting the citizenry and there is no money flowing here among the serfs of the...
The peasants.
If the peasants have no money, then they're going to start fighting amongst themselves.
It's already started.
This whole shit show can't sustain itself. It's not going to work.
Mm-mm.
And it's not going to be pretty if it comes down to... Iran just said, oh, hey, guess what, fuckers? We've got some uranium and we're totally enriching it. And you all can't come to our prom and fuck you. And we're going to do whatever we want. And you guys are lame. And we lie to you all the time. And you're just like, don't do that. We're just like, fuck you, whatever. We're going to do it, fuckers. And then we do it. And then you're like, bad, you're bad. And then we're like, whatever. And then we do it again.
Iran as a valley girl.
Totally. Oh, my God. We are so going to the mall, and we're going to get more uranium, and we are totally going to enrich it.
Oh, my God.
We're going to be so enriched.
What is your persona for Russia?
Oh, I can't do that on the spot.
What? Who are you? Of course you can. Oh, another thing that's happened recently is, you know, California's on fire again, of course. It is our natural fire season.
Right.
But the fires are getting more frequent and larger and more destructive. And Trump says,
nothing.
Fuck you, California. Doesn't say anything for a long time and then doesn't have any words of comfort as a leader should.
He hates us.
He says something stupid like, well, I told you what to do. Now you don't get any federal money.
We're going to send you some rakes. Right. No federal money.
In the meantime, Siberia was also on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And Putin came out this week and said, Trump was offering me help. He was going to send help for our forest fires.
You're kidding.
No, he won't even help the most populous state in the union that sends the most money to the federal government and has the best people. But he'll send money to Putin to help fight their wildfires in Siberia where nobody lives.
And meanwhile,
let's get out of the Paris Climate Agreement.
The Trumpies are like, he's done nothing wrong.
Well, no, they don't even say that. They say he's done everything. He's saved the country. From what?
Right.
What has he done that isn't horrible? Can you name anything that he's done that isn't horrible?
No, I can't.
He looks horrible. He's awful. I can't.
He's got bad hair.
He probably has bad breath.
Oh, God. He's a germaphobe.
He keeps cocaine dealers in business.
I think maybe we should just start sending our snotty tissues to him in a box.
No, the FBI would show up.
Oh, yeah.
That could be deemed, toxic or infectious.
Oh, yeah, we'd be arrested in a heartbeat, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Terrorists. They sent me their snotty tissues and that scares me.
Is that your federal government voice or just Trump? Why does he sound like Eric Cartman?
That's my default. Eric Cartman. Speak my authority.
How does your dog Pico sound?
Derby-doo.
Oh, that's right. Derby-doo.
He doesn't have words. He's...
To our listeners around the world, we have this stupid thing called daylight savings time. Actually, I like daylight savings time. I hate standard time.
I don't
care which way.
Just don't
leave it one way.
So for some reason, some dumbass somewhere seems to think we can cheat time and fall back an hour in the fall and spring forward in the spring. An hour, right?
Yeah.
Why?
It used to be for farms. for family farms.
Stupid.
It's stupid because nothing runs like that anymore. No. We don't need that.
We have lights.
P.S. By the way, if I need to get to work an hour earlier, just get up an hour earlier and go to work an hour earlier.
Right?
You don't need to fool me with a fucking fake time change.
Right? Another control move that's just totally impotent.
It fucks with me every single year.
It's bad news.
And it gets worse and worse every year. I don't know if it's because I'm more aware of it or what, but like, I already suffer. I hate it when people say that. I already have the seasonal affective disorder. I feel like this year I had a few days that were really bad, and it gets worse on the day of the time change.
Yeah, because it's...
But my husband was so sweet because I think I told him and I told you and maybe one other person, like, watch me.
Yeah.
Like, make sure that I'm okay. Because now I know that it happens and that it's not an anomaly. It's probably going to happen every year. But so Sunday, the day of that the time had changed, I was all fucked up and I was doing some ceramics and he was working around the house. And then about 3 o'clock, he came in, showered, changed out of work clothes, was all dressed up. And he's like, let's go out.
Oh,
and I go, what?
Sweet.
He goes, let's go out before it gets dark.
Oh.
And he just had this huge grin on his face. Oh. Like, it was very sweet. So we went out and we had this whole adventure. We went to like 5 different places and drank beers.
That's
and
cool.
Ate chocolate and yeah.
Did all of the things.
Laughed. And
do you think it's easier when you're out and it gets darker rather than being home
yes.
when it gets dark?
Yes. Yeah. It just fucks with my schedule. Like, it like all day long today, even I was like, I couldn't tell if I was hungry or not. Like, I was just all fucked up.
Yeah.
And I get tired during the day and then I'm wide awake at night. I'm just.
Yeah, I'm all, yeah, my circadian rhythm's all messed up too. And it's, you know, it's just one of those things. We are organic creatures and we live by our environment. Just like the dogs who, when the light is a certain way outside, know it's time to eat. Right?
Right.
That's how my dog is.
Yeah.
So his usual feeding time is 6:30. So on Sunday, poor guy, he's just like... 5:30, he just starts walking around, you know, he's just wiggling his butt, he's all ready, and I'm like, sorry, dude.
Kim's dog is like 150 pounds or some shit. He's gigantic, and he's the sweetest thing ever.
Oh, Pico. And Chloe's like, nope, 6:30 is his feeding time, and I'm like, I'm not going to get into it with her, but in my mind, I'm thinking, come on, you know, maybe 5:45... 6 o'clock the next, you know, like
right.
ease him into it. But to have to wait an hour.
Have you explained to her that time is a social construct?
No.
It doesn't really exist. Not in the way that we know it today.
How we fashioned it.
Yes, we have fashioned it. Hmm. It doesn't exist.
That I like that.
We'll talk about that on another episode. We should probably wrap this up.
Can we smoke pot?
When we talk about time?
Yes.
We should have somebody here to monitor us, though.
Why?
Because we get all loopy and, like, go, like that.
Well, so? That's fun!
Any last thoughts about religion and politics all mixed up?
And fear.
Marco Rubio and fear.
And fear.
Lindsey Graham.
I think the best thing that we can do is not be afraid and be fearless and take the risks of fearlessness.
Like Gilgamesh's twin?
And
no,
grow.
Like Gilgamesh? Like what?
And grow.
As humans?
I think fear stunts us.
Puts oh, definitely.
Us, you know, in a little box. It holds us down.
Well, we talked about it. It's that, you know, it keeps you alive. When you're a caveman.
It does. There's some definite ups and... Yeah.
But
you can't live in fear.
No.
But you can't stick your head in the fire either.
Bob.
Oh,
fucking
hell.
Bob. All right.
Bob.
Bad to the bone. I'm Bob to the bone.
Ah. Curio Podcast is a Porch Swing production. Big thanks to all of our contributors and special guests. For more info, please visit Twitter at Podcast Curio, Curio Podcast on Facebook, and CurioPodcast.org. And remember, Curio Podcast loves you.
Yay!